I'm speaking today with Mike Van Patten, who is the CEO and founder of Mission Markets. Mike, it's good to have you with us today. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Olivia.
Can you explain what Mission Markets is?
Mission Markets is creating, and we're about to launch, an electronic transactions and communications platform that is going to help increase efficiencies for social responsible investors, organizations seeking capital, organizations who are involved in both social and environmental market opportunities. And so what we're trying to do is create a centralized, very efficient, cost-effective electronic mechanism or exchange, if you will, for stakeholders who are involved in the above markets that I just mentioned. And the subsectors and all the various, service organizations that revolve around all these markets. And we're doing this because we feel that in order to get scale into these markets, you need to have efficiencies, you need to have standardization, and you need to have more accessible information in one kind of easily accessible web-based application. And that's what we're doing.
And what type of markets specifically? I know that they are markets with a social impact or an environmental impact, but what are you focused on within those two larger subsets?
Okay, very good question. First of all, in the social, what I call social capital markets, we're looking at major sectors such as community investment, which is used here in the U.S. It represents organizations such as community development financial institutions, community development banks that deploy capital to support low-income housing or what you would call underserved communities in the U.S. that do not have access to traditional products and services or financial services that maybe some of the other what I would call middle-income or higher-income communities have. And they also use different mechanisms to support renewable energy in communities, brownfield redevelopment, things like that. Also, we're looking at and to support organizations that are what we call traditional social enterprises. So that could be organizations that define themselves as a B Corp or an L3C corporation. So it's an organization that either provides a social responsible product or service as their main business model, or it could be an organization that operates in a social responsible manner. Now, their business product or their service may not necessarily be social responsible, but internally they do everything they can in order to operate in a social responsible manner. Trying to reduce their carbon footprint, access or using services of other organizations who are trying to provide social responsible services. So it's whether they have a product or service that's specifically green or social responsible, or they operate in a social responsible manner. And so that pretty much what identifies what a B Corp is. I mean, we are B Corp as well. We just officially became one last week. So that's one area. The other area is microfinance, which most people know what that is, but in the global microfinance area, even though that market is really very much scaled into the multi-billions every year, it's still not as efficient as it could be. Majority of those transactions tend to be private or unregistered debt and equity transactions, so we're trying to support the market by creating more efficiencies to provide liquidity for those markets. The other market in the social space, but it could be looked upon as environmental as well, is sustainable agriculture. Food groups, local food networks, local and regional farmers who are interested in providing, organic or biodynamic processes to make sure that the food is delivered to those local communities that is healthy, that is, certainly fresh, and that has as low food miles as possible. So those type of organizations and communities. The other area in the environmental is what we call climate change, but it encompasses things like carbon, renewable energy, clean tech, anything that type of organization or process that is trying to reduce the amount of, you know, carbon or pollutants that are going into the atmosphere and creating global warming. The other area is conservation finance, and that includes, you know, things that are called payments for ecosystem services, habitat, wetland banking. We're trying to provide an efficient mechanism where those organizations that operate can either raise capital, or organizations that generate and create projects that protect wetlands or protect endangered species can raise capital, and then the resulting environmental credits that are derived from that, they can actually sell them efficiently. Another big area that we're supporting is the sustainable fisheries area. You know, fisheries throughout the world, and specifically here in the U.S., are being depleted, and that is having a very negative effect on the communities that depend on those, you know, on the revenue from those fisheries. And we are supporting that through various mechanisms that I can go into, such as providing a format where organizations that are trying to raise capital to deploy to the local fishermen called fisheries trusts or fisheries co-ops, raise capital for those. We're also providing infrastructure where fishermen who buy and sell commercial permits can actually have a centralized platform in order to buy and sell those in a cost-effective manner and access information so they can more effectively make decisions about buying and selling commercial fishing permits, or what they're called as catch shares. So I know a lot of those markets seem to, you know, you're wondering, they seem very separate, but in my opinion, the one thing that ties them in is they tend to be focused in local or regional areas of our country or the world, and each one of those specifically is also has a very strong community element tied to it. So what happens in the environmental affects the social side as well. So we believe that the silos that we call of social and environmental investing are absolutely coming together, and we're trying to support that through creating these efficiencies.
You talked about in the beginning, Mission Markets is an exchange for stakeholders in these various markets, which you just gave us some examples and elaboration of. So, you've just been touching on this, but let's say that I come to the site, and I can come as an investor, I can come as an entrepreneur looking for investment, and I can come, for example, to buy and sell commercial fishing permits or renewable energy credits. Did I get that right? Or
yes, you actually, that was actually pretty accurate. Let me kind of describe to you the two business segments of our and how our business model works and why it has to be constructed this way. First of all, you have one aspect of our business that is regulated under the laws of the Securities and Exchange Commission and something called FINRA, which is the governing body for broker-dealers. Because we raise capital in what are called private placements for private enterprises or even public companies, if they're socially responsible, we are regulated, and we cannot just go out and offer those shares or that investment to anyone. So that is under the auspices of those regulations, we are password protected. Those type of opportunities, because they're non-registered securities and private securities, can only be offered to what are called accredited individual or institutional investors. So one part of our platform, which is we call it the private capital marketplace, only facilitates investments for accredited investors, institutions, who are looking to deploy capital into these. And they could be foundations looking to make program-related investments, whatever. That is highly regulated. It's a process that we have to follow, and so that's one aspect of our business. So somebody who's just looking to put in $1,000, he may only make, you know, $50,000 or $100,000 a year. He's not considered accredited unless he has at least, a million in assets plus, or a $200,000 a year annual income. So he would not be able to access this platform in order to invest capital. So that's one aspect. However, if you're an issuer, you looking to raise capital, yes, you would be a member of that platform, because you are looking to raise capital in a private placement from accredited investors, and we provide that infrastructure. So there's those two parts. The other part that would be involved in this are what I would call third-party service providers. So those could be providers like B Corp. It could be organizations like Flora and Fauna, or the Natural Value Initiative, which is creating a metric for ecosystem services. Or it could be advisors or broker-dealers who advise high-net-worth individuals and our fiduciary. So on behalf of those investors, they by the fact that they are representing them, could access our platform in order to advise their clients and provide access to alternative investments that would be displayed on our platform. So that's one aspect of our business. So it's providing that secure, password-protected, accredited investor-only mechanism. The other aspect of our business is something we call Mission Markets Earth. That is a transaction system and data system for what we would call non-investment securities or non-investments. And those things are things like fisheries catch shares, commercial fishing permits, ecosystem credits or habitat, wetland, water quality, water pollution credits, or transferable development rights. These are all market-based mechanisms that are also regulated under whether it's the Clean Water Act, Endangered Species Act, or the Magnuson-Stevenson Fisheries Conservation Management Act. They're all under some form of cap and trade or regulation that's driving these markets. And we believe that those are highly important because they reduce the impact that corporations have on our planet. They reduce the amount of pollution that goes into water bodies. But these are all market-based mechanisms that are not considered investment vehicles. That's still under a password-protected site, but that would be accessible to anyone who goes through a questionnaire that we would have, and then we have to prove them. But for the most part, you do not have to be accredited to become involved in those markets. But they tend to be more the domain of what I would call an environmental market stakeholder. So it could be a commercial fisherman. It could be a seafood processor. It could be what is called an environmental banker, who's actually an environmental engineer that creates wetland mitigation projects. It could be a real estate professional that buys and sells transferable development rights, which are actually easements on property that are created in order to protect valuable property, farmlands, forest lands, property that a city believes is important to not develop. So it's more of a transaction platform for what I would call stakeholders. But our belief is that going forward over the next several years, you're going to see, from a voluntary standpoint, corporations or investors get involved in these markets. Corporations are looking to offset or reduce their impact for their stakeholders or for their CSR departments, and investors can actually take advantage of some of these markets because there is capital appreciation in some of these environmental credits. But it's still, these markets are still, for the most part, in their infancy, and we're just trying to create more efficiencies. So that's two of our businesses. So it's one is the what I would call the regulated investment private placement capital raising market. The other is what we consider monetization and liquidity for environmental transactions and environmental credits.
Okay. All right. So now that we've got a better
No, that's fairly complicated.
Well, I guess there are, as you mentioned, that there are separate markets that you see them the commonality as having this element of community and this refusion of or a consequence of environmental and the social and how they're interrelated and connected. So, Mike, I want to ask you now how you came to found Mission Markets. You have a very traditional Wall Street background, 2 decades at Wall Street, former president, vice president of Bear Stearns. Had you always been interested in emerging markets and social and environmental cause? Did you have an experience? Was this a dream that you were looking to fulfill for a while? How did you come to found it?
Well, let me just kind of – my background is, yes, it's traditional Wall Street. 20-plus years, I was at organizations such as Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns as a institutional bond trader and salesman. But my interest in these markets, at least from a social standpoint, came much earlier in my life. I lived in Ecuador, South America, from the age of 16 to 20, and really was very much in, my father was a diplomat. I was very much immersed in the inequalities of culture and society, and every day faced with seeing people who just have no chance or no access to some basic goods and services, and, you know, started realizing how lucky we are here in the U.S. You know, living in a third world country, you really see poverty, but poverty in a way that where people, you know, are living in cardboard boxes, and you have, there's no laws that require children to go to school because they have to support the family. So you have institutionalized poverty, and it's hard to get out of that. And it affected me greatly. It was hard to, being somebody who saw this every day, I was, you know, and being considered a, you know, American or what they would call a foreigner, I was targeted all the time by people who wanted to, you know, are looking for money. They have their hand out. It was hard for me to ignore that. And I know that people always told me, you know, you've got to ignore this. You just got to act as if they aren't there. And I couldn't do that. So literally I would just give out my entire allowance, you know, when I was 16, 17 years old, and just give it away. Because I knew that what I was giving them for me wasn't that much, but to them it could have been, you know, a whole day's wage or whatever. So, you know, in my own way, I felt like I was trying to do something, but it was very, you know, it didn't really add up to a lot. It just made me feel a little bit better. That actually stuck with me for years, although it didn't really enter the way I make a living for many, many years. You know, really in the, I'd say around 2007, 2008, before the market started getting, you know, bad and the economy started falling apart, I was already becoming very disenchanted with traditional Wall Street, and I started looking at ways that my background, understanding how to create efficient markets and understanding capital markets in general, are there ways that I can apply to the social and environmental markets that would help these markets scale? Is there a business opportunity there? And I started looking at microfinance, and then I started looking at carbon. Those are the first two things I looked at, because microfinance is the most, you know, advanced of all what I would consider social capital markets, at least around the world. And then carbon is, you know, in the environmental space was the most advanced. And I just started talking to people. I started learning more about them. The more I started learning about these markets, the more I started learning that there was other markets that were in need as well. And this was back in, you know, March of 2008. And that's when I decided that I was going to pursue and create mission markets and do this full time. Little did I know that I was doing this at the very beginning of one of the worst economic crises we've, you know, seen since the Great Depression. And so that made accessing capital or trying to raise capital for this and the timing of mission markets rollout, it slowed that down considerably and made it much more challenging. So, you know, if you would have asked me in, you know, March of 2008 how long would have I thought that it would take me to launch mission markets back then, I would have said, you know, six months to 9 months. And here we are, you know, in mid-April of 2010, and we are about to launch, but it's taken us, you know, well over 2 years. But I think that that's actually been good, because I've been able to learn what these markets really are. It's not easy being somebody who's considered, in my opinion, to be an outsider, just coming onto the scene and saying, you know, I'm going to change this business. And, you know, really, I've been very humbled, because coming from Wall Street, you tend to have a very be very confident. Things move a lot quicker, and you tend to want to dictate things because maybe you have capital and you have access to capital. That doesn't happen in these markets. I mean, these markets, you know, the social environmental markets have been around for a long time, but the people in them have been working on some of these things for many, many years. They're not that simple. And so over the last couple of years, I've really had a big lesson or an education about process and how to go about these markets. Where are the opportunities? Where are the challenges? And I think I've identified quite a few of them. We're still learning. I mean, every day is an evolution. But, you know, there's a lot that can be done that we think we can do to help scale these markets. but that's in collaboration with many, many other organizations who've been doing this for a long time, much longer than I have, who have much more knowledge about these markets than myself, and we're going to be using them to help us scale these markets. So we are just one cog in a wheel. And it's going to take the cooperation of many of those spokes in order for us to really scale these markets. And I do believe we're starting to see the beginnings of that with, you know, collaborations with organizations like, you know, B-Lab or, you know, Flora and Fauna, True Cost, and other organizations in the environmental side.
So, and you said that it's been a learning process and somewhat difficult to come in as an outsider. So could you, do you have an example of something that you've learned in the 2 years that it's taken you to come to launch with Mission Markets, or one of the biggest surprises that you've faced as you did become more immersed and working with these organizations more closely?
I think one of the biggest challenges, or what I would say lessons that I've had to learn, is the speed at which things move in many of these markets. And I don't think it's the speed because people don't want them to move quickly. What I'm saying speed is things kind of move at a slower pace. Wall Street moves at a fast pace, and people on Wall Street tend to be impatient. So I've had to learn a lot of patience. The reason why is many of the what I would call infrastructure needs that are being created, such as, you know, social metrics, they're not just they're hard to quantify. And it's not something you just pick out and say, that's the number, that's the rating, this is the way it's got to be done. It's because there's so many different stakeholders, there's so many people involved, and there's so many ways to look at a certain problem. It actually makes it more difficult. And I think that people in the space, when Wall Street, they're not very collaborative. They just do things, and it's all about, you know, the single bottom line. It's all about me and how much is it for me. But I think in the social space, clearly, it's not just about that. It's about being collaborative. It's about engaging with other people. It's about sharing ideas. It's about also respecting other people's boundaries and their knowledge level, and making sure that they're engaged in the process as you go along, versus, you know, thinking that we can do this all ourselves, we don't need them. I really think in the social space that everybody really needs each other, and what I've also found is everybody knows each other. It's a big world, but it's also a very, very small world, and you keep on running into the same people and over again, and you need to make sure that you process information and operate in a manner that is very collaborative, or you're not going to be successful. That's the same way in the environmental space as well. Although the environmental space, in my opinion, tends to be a little bit more advanced because you do have, rules and regulations that are brought on by the government, you know, Clean Water Act, Endangered Species Act. So it's easy to operate under a regulatory framework because you have clear guidelines. Where in the social space, you know, you don't necessarily have that. A lot of it's vague. A lot of, when you're dealing with nonprofits, how do they quantify their success? You know, these are all hard, you know, these are things that are being changed now, but the way people are doing business has not changed that much over the many, 20, 30 years, other than technology making things, information more accessible. And so I think it's just getting used to the pace at which the social and environmental markets move, and that's not the same pace as what I was used to moving at, and just having to take a step back and understanding and realizing that I don't have all the answers, but I need other people to help me on this, and I can't do it all by myself.
So do you find that this, with adhering to a different pace, a different set of processes, and in a more collaborative environment, do you find it more enjoyable, or is that too black and white of a question? I mean, how has it been for you on a personal level in terms of engaging in this as an entrepreneur?
Well, I found it at the beginning difficult because being someone who's rather impatient, I don't like to wait for other people. Mm-hmm. I want to get answers, and I want to start to develop them and start implementing things now, being not only again, from Wall Street, but also an entrepreneur. It's just, usually you have a can-do attitude. You have an attitude where you just depend on yourself and to get things done. So in the beginning, I found it difficult. Now I'm finding it very enjoyable because what you're finding is what I find is a lot of the relationships we're developing, they're very collaborative, that the person on the other end doesn't necessarily say what's in it for me. A lot of them want to be involved with us and what we're doing because they look at it that it's good for the overall movement or the social space, that it's going to progress it. And so it's very much a they have an attitude that we're all in this together, and for us to move this space forward, we need this collaboration versus, okay, how much am I getting paid on this? How much am I going to get paid on each transaction, which is that Wall Street single bottom line? It's more intangible. They do care about things other than money. They absolutely believe in what they're doing. And it's not just because, you know, they don't have their hand out saying, how much are you going to give me for that? That is what I find extremely gratifying. And that it's also changed my attitude about things, that I'm finding myself not caring as much about that as, you know, how much money are we going to make and things like that. I mean, we're a private enterprise. We have to generate revenue. But we're more focused at our organization on, you know, how is what we're doing going to really change and help everybody else, not just help a certain segment. So it's been a learning process. It's taken me, you know, a couple of years, but I've definitely got it. I've bought into it, and very much care about these markets. And as I become more educated about these markets, I'm becoming more aware of all the challenges that exist and why it's so hard to get things done.
And do you feel that this then spills over into the way you carry or the way you think about things in your personal life or your view of the world?
Yes, very much so. Very, very much so. Just, first of all, I've become much more patient. I've become much more, in my own life, conscious about what I do and what I do on a daily basis and what impact it has. Now, granted, maybe me, you know, turning off my water when I brush my teeth or trying to, you know, think about my carbon footprint or doing everything else, maybe just that only affects me. But I think that if I, you know, if I don't start with myself, which I can control, how am I expected that anybody else is going to do that? You know, just the little things that we can do that, you know, we're, again, in the U.S. here, you know, we have abundance, but other countries around the world don't. And I think about that every time I do something. When I'm, again, using the water faucet, I think about, you know, women in Sub-Saharan Africa or, you know, Latin America or India that water, you know, they have to travel miles for. I think about, you know, the fact that our water is clean, that they don't have that. So everything that I do, food, how I, you know, the miles that I drive, I'm thinking about these things. What impact am I having on this world, and what can I do to reduce that impact? And then, you know, teaching that to my children is the same thing. And they're, you know, they're buying into this as well. So I think the next generation, you know, of the, you know, 20, let's say 25 and under, they're already, in my opinion, thinking about this. And that to me is extremely, that makes me very optimistic about the future of this, you know, country and this world. But I hope that, you know, my generation, you know, the 40 plus, doesn't screw it up for them.
Well, that's really fantastic. And I want to talk now about we've talked a little about the social and the environmental impact of emission markets and some of the motivations in given your experience in third world countries that led to its founding. So, but also you come from a pragmatic and a financial background. So can you talk a little bit about what you see as the financial potential for these emerging markets that have, you call them impact investment markets, is that the term I read? Did I get that correct?
Sure. Are you saying what is the potential for return on investment for investors? Is that what you're saying, where the opportunities exist?
Right. I want to talk a little bit more about the financial now, but
okay.
I think we've got a sense of what the social impact is.
Okay. First of all, I think one of the biggest opportunities, and it's not just me saying this, but it's been said repeatedly, is for foundations to more effectively use program-related investment and for the other 95% of their assets, mission-related investing. I think that that is a huge opportunity that's still untapped, and I think it's going to be growing. So I think that
what does mission-related investments mean exactly?
Okay.
What's the definition of that?
Mission-related investment, as I understand it, is it is a use of assets outside of the required assets, you know, under a foundation, you know, it has a certain amount that they have to absolutely grant or use PRIs for. And it's that other 95% where they choose to voluntarily invest based upon that foundation or that organization's, you know, social or environmental mission that also continue to support that mission. So it could be, you know, making low interest loans. It could be investing in socially responsible companies. It could be investing in, you know, carbon projects or carbon finance or funds. So it's not required by, you know, the IRS. But what it does is supports that organization's mission, and it's putting money into social and environmentally responsible organizations and projects.
I might be cutting off here, but what about individual accredited investors?
Okay.
Do you think that the tide is changing? People are starting to look more to socially responsible investments that are socially responsibly invested, or is that still, particularly given the traditional financial sector, is it still a hard sell?
I think that that's a very good question, and my answer is yes. You're seeing more and more private, and I'm going to talk about the people that I talk to, private wealthy individuals who are looking to take a percentage of their capital and invest it in a way that they can direct impact to either a region of the country they live in or a sector that they feel specifically engaged with. And so part of Mission Markets' business model actually is to support and promote localized investment. So, you know, I'm a high net worth individual. I see that there is a community development financial institution or a community development bank in my neighborhood. So instead of maybe taking money from, instead of rolling over my CD at one of the larger banks, I decide that I want to put money or deposit money into that or in that bank because it's supporting, you know, low income housing or supporting, you know, small businesses in my neighborhood or community. Or, you know, in my region of the country. So I think it's being able to provide investors more choices for them to be able to deploy capital more efficiently and still get a return on their investment. So not necessarily having to give up anything. They're still getting a return on investment. They're still doing things maybe in a way that they would have. But they're able to identify more opportunities and choices that they may not have considered that are you know, social or environmentally that provide some type of social or environmental return and impact. I think that is a trend that I'm seeing. So it is from the individual, and he's directing that his private wealth manager, or if he's you know, part of a family office, he's directing him to do that. So I'm seeing those type of opportunities. And again, there are opportunities where people can get market rate returns. When I mean market rate, if it's debt, it could be, you know, 4%, 5%, 6% a year. Potential equity upside returns in or private equity investments, environmental. You know, if you're talking about you know, environmental markets opportunities, you know, again, fisheries trusts, carbon offset projects. Although a lot of these types of structures are very much in their infancy, so financial returns have not necessarily been documented for a lot of this. So I think that some of these markets are still very early for what I would call the individual investor. Maybe they're more applicable to a you know, institution. But as these markets continue to evolve, you're going to see returns get more defined, and you're going to see more opportunities for return. Because what's happening is you're also seeing the traditional investment banking and broker-dealer community wake up to this. So they're going to be wanting to provide products and services that support this trend. Because not because they necessarily care about these markets, but because it is a market opportunity for them, and because their customers are demanding it. If they don't get it if their customers don't get the service or product from them, they're going to go to somebody else. So I do see that being driven very much from what do we call the bottom up.
Okay.
Does that answer your question at all?
Yeah, that was a very complete and that was a good answer. So, Mike, thanks for that. And I want to now ask you about your partnership with B Corp. And you said last week that you became certified as a B Corporation, which most of our listeners know, but this stands for beneficial. And there's a pretty rigorous criteria process that companies go through to be certified as a B Corporation, and it's a really wonderful thing, and it's growing. So congratulations on that. And then what are you going to be doing with B Corp going forward now?
Okay. Well, first of all, we want to we want to support B Corps. In fact, in everything that we do, before we make a decision, like giving example, the organization that is developing our transactions platform is a B Corp. It's called Single Brick Technologies. They're in Ithaca, New York. They're a B Corp. The organization that printed our business cards is a B Corp. We're trying to at least, before we make a decision on any product or service, we want to see if there's a B Corp out there that provides this product or services, and we want to give them business because we want to support B Corps. We also are going to be supporting B Corps from a capital raising perspective. If there's a B Corp that meets a certain minimum listing requirement that we would have, meaning it's not a pure startup, and it has, you know, it's been in business for a little bit of time and has maybe some revenues, we would be able to support them by raising capital for them on our transaction platform. But even just from a basic level, B Corp has a B survey. And what we want to do is we want to make that B survey one of the requirements for a social enterprise to come on, that they would take the B survey and they would get some type of B rating. Even though they're not an official B Corp, they can still take the B survey and start internally monitoring, you know, the different classifications that the B survey asks you. And so that at least gives some type of quantification to an investor who may be looking at investing in that social enterprise. Transparency. How did that company do in this B survey? You know, what was their rating? And then to just give more visibility into what that company's motivations are, how they operate them internally, and it's our way of trying to promote a standard and an adoption of a process. So that is pretty much how we're interacting with B Corp, because we absolutely believe in what they do. We believe in the process. We think it's a very, at least one tool that an investor can use in order to make a decision on if he wants to even further invest in a, you know, invest in a company or do more due diligence.
That's terrific. You mentioned, I mean, the one aspect of using it as a quantifier and as an indicator for investors, but and you also mentioned the fact that it really brings awareness to these companies about the different levels of being a socially aware and socially responsible business. And I really think that it helps then push them to, if not go for a complete B certification, to certainly implement some of these practices, which are beneficial to the business world and to society. So I think that that's a really smart thing for both of those reasons.
Well, thank you.
I like that. And I see the community of B Corps, as they're growing, there is this economy within it. And I've spoken to some other entrepreneurs who have become certified, and it's really interesting, and it's just wonderful to take advantage of those relationships. So it sounds like, I think the B Corp certification is becoming increasingly more useful as more companies are certified.
Yeah, and one of the great things too about being a B Corp, and I'm sure you know many people do know this, is that we as a B Corp can get discounts on many products and services from other B Corps or from major organizations like Salesforce.com, in their CRM software. So there's advantages above and beyond just making sure that you operate in a socially responsible manner. You know, you can. Other B Corps are giving discounts to other B Corps. I mean, I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've spoken to someone who got a significant discount in, I forget what it was. It was some type of platform that they were using. I think an e-commerce platform. So it's really fantastic. So I've got more of a process-driven question, I guess. If I'm an entrepreneur, because a social entrepreneur, I get a lot of these questions. How would I be able to submit my business or my venture for funding on Mission Market?
You would actually go in. It's actually ready today, but we're not officially, telling the world about it. You go into our platform. You'd apply online. You would get a password. You'd go in online. Then we'd give you a password, and then you go in and start filling out documentation and all the questions that we have. It's a fairly in-depth questionnaire that we have that also allows you to upload documents, upload photos if you're doing environmental projects or if you have, if you're doing LEED certified real estate. And then what we do is we go over it and we make sure that you have, you qualify for minimum listing requirements, that you have some audited financials, that, if you went through the B survey, things like that. And then we would approve or disapprove your listing. And then once it's approved, it would be up there, and then we could make it accessible to investors who wanted to see that opportunity. So it's a process that, while not complicated, it is in-depth because we do require quite a bit of information from that company because investors are going to want that information. And, if I had a WebEx, I could actually walk you through it, but it's fairly transparent. So the issuer who's trying to raise capital, he's pretty much going to be divulging a lot of information to potential investors about this, about his organization, their business model, what their social environmental mission is. If they have one, they should, because they wouldn't be on without one. Their financials, what the offering details are. The organization then can put out press releases from that portal on our website. So it's very, very comprehensive what we provide, because we want to make sure that investors understand the full story. But also, this is not a way to create anonymity. The investor can contact the issuer directly, has all the information, the contact person. We want this to be a very engaged process. So we provide as much information as we possibly can that an investor could, coming onto the site, can see, and then give him to make sure that this is enough information for him to want to go and then learn more. Because we don't expect him just to do this all electronically. Social impact and environmental impact investing is not about just reading something and making a decision based on that. It's about being engaged. And that's why we very much feel that it's more consistent with somebody who wants to invest locally or get to know the organizations that they're in becoming involved in. So that's why we feel that specifically the way we're creating this is so individuals can, create their own little localized kind of private exchanges or communities around these investments. And eventually we're going to be, including the ability for, cause-based investors and these investors to be able to form their own little investment groups and collaborate with each other to go out and visit organizations in their, community that are trying to raise capital on our platform and be able to understand their business model and get to know those people. It's so important.
I love
important.
That idea.
Excuse me?
That's really cool. I love that idea. That's really cool.
It's because the lot of people, when they first, when we first talked to them, they were saying, but, I want to get to know these corporations or these organizations. They're saying, we're telling them, we are just one step in the process, bringing attention. And then what happens is after that investment's made, we provide a very efficient mechanism where that corporation can continue to update its investors through our platform about what they're doing and create more relationships with potential investors down the road if, in fact, they need to raise more money or if they have a product or service that they want to promote. So it's a way for us to really provide that feel, that the community feel, because it's all about community. It's all about directing impact and being able to understand where that impact is going and how your money and what your money is actually doing.
Mike, I'm really glad that we got into that last element of it, because it is so engaging, and you talked more about an exchange, but now I really understand. I mean, in the beginning, you said it's an exchange for shareholders in these various types of or stakeholders in these markets, but I really understand the level of community and engagement that you are facilitating, which is terrific. And it just seems to be that you're presenting this extended experience. So it's not looking at the numerical returns of an investment, but it's looking at these other factors, which are often more personal or emotional factors, which they still have these strong financial components. I give that disclosure there at the end just because it feels like, if we start talking about financial returns, we don't want to start talking about the personal or the emotional. That's a sign that it's weaker. And I don't think it is. I think that what we're seeing is that there are strong financial returns, but then there's more to it. There's a different type of experience that investors can take away from it that could be more enriching, just of a different character.
That is correct.
Are there other things you're doing in terms of educating people about? I understand that you're you've got this ambitious platform and you're doing a lot. So I don't want it to sound that like it's not enough, but are there other initiatives you have to educate people? I know that you're trying to bring awareness to having people look at the social and environmental returns on an investment in addition to the financial returns.
Yes, in fact, we believe one of our biggest challenges in any, you know, emerging or kind of what I would call nascent markets is advocacy and education. In that, a lot of impact investors may not even be aware of some of the direct challenges that exist. So if they're not aware of it, how can they actually support it? So one of the things we're doing is creating strategic relationships with various NGOs where we don't educate them, they educate them. And what we're going to be doing is providing like WebEx, and conference calls, things like, Fisheries 101, Ecosystem Services 101, basic stuff like, Brownfield Redevelopment 101. What does that mean? What is brownfield redevelopment? How does it help communities? How can I get involved? So really starting at the very basic level where members can participate and they hear it from, organizations that are third parties who are experts in these fields or scientists, because I think it's so important for institutions and individuals in general who want to support these to really understand what the challenges are and what the needs are and why they need to support this, and what are the opportunities, what are the potential risks, and what stage are these markets in. So we are going to be doing that, and we'd like to call it, what we have something is on our website, it's called, I think it's called our Knowledge Center. By starting off, and there's a lot of information there, but we're involved in so many markets. So it's about making sure that people have access to the information that we read ourselves to get knowledge on the markets. And so it's, being able to provide them with reports, PDFs, research projects that are available online, but we put them all in one place so they can go. And so these are some of the reports and or research projects, papers that we feel are some of the best that we've read out there. And so we've put them online here, and that's just a start. So access, being able to access resources, education, and then creating interactive, WebEx is just one of the things that we're going to be doing to start off with. And then it's a big process. I mean, we think that really the rest of this year, clearly, and into next year, it's all about educating people about these markets. And clearly, as a business, we have to generate revenue because we're not charging people for this. The only way we make money is when a transaction occurs. And so eventually transactions do have to occur. But still, that's only about 25 to 30% of our business. Everything else is about the services around those transactions that enables people to transact, enables people to understand what the markets are and the opportunities. And so it's really everything supports the transaction, but that's only still a small component of what we do.
That's really interesting. I'm impressed with the holistic approach that you're bringing to this. Can you, perhaps my final question, but can you share your grand dream for Mission Markets? And sometimes I know it's hard to publicly voice what we really want to create, but if you could really share your highest aspiration for this platform.
I think it's quite simply that if you're a social or environmental stakeholder, that means you're an investor, you're an issuer, you're an NGO service provider, you are a member of Mission Markets. Whether you're a member of Mission Markets Private Capital Marketplace or Mission Markets Earth, doesn't matter. You're a member of Mission Markets, and this is where you come to get your information.
Great. And, Mac, is there anything else that you want to share before we wrap up today?
No, I think your questions have been very, very complete. I think that's pretty much it. We're going to be I guess I'll plug. We're going to be launching towards the end of this month. The private capital marketplace will be able to officially raise capital for transactions. And then Mission Markets Earth more towards the end of May. And so we'll be able to facilitate transactions for multiple environmental credits, fisheries catch shares, and things like that. So if anybody has any further questions, they can go to the website or, email me.
Thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us about this. And I'm really very excited to see how it develops and the conversations and engagement that takes place on this and then because of it.
Well, thank you for having me, Olivia.
For more interviews about cause capitalism, visit causecapitalism.com.